Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the TMGS. The time is now 6:03 on the East Coast, 3:03 on the West Coast, and you're tuned into the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network. Happy Saturday to you. Thank you for tuning in. Remember that you can go to the internet, go to www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGS if you like to hear the show or listen to it on the internet. And if you're listening to the internet and you want to call in, you can call into the show at 516-531-9861. That's 516-531-9861. Now, for the people who don't like to talk on the phone, the reason why I told you how to, you know, respond on the internet, because there's a chat room, and you can go into the chat room and you can type your questions or comments there, and I'll read them on the air. Again, you're tuning into the TMGS Michael Gay Show on this cold Saturday here in the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. And today we have some topics we want to talk about. Some things that have gone on this week, some very interesting things that happened just yesterday and the day before, some sad news, some good news. And also we have a special guest in the second hour, Mr. Edward Morgan, who is a beekeeper. And I've had him on the show before, and I wanted to bring him back because I happened to run across a video about bees, and I'm a animal enthusiast. I mean, animals, I mean, bees, I'm just so amazed at their complex way of life and what they do and what just their instincts of doing things. And the reason I asked him to come back on is because I saw a video and read some articles of how bees are becoming, especially honeybees, more extinct. and how we take for granted how important they are to what we eat, you know, the foods that we eat, the stuff that we love, but just to eat. And we just don't care. It just seems we don't care. We're destroying their environment. Folks are killing bees, and there are some states that you can get in a world of trouble for killing bees. Let me see. I just got a text from someone, so let me go ahead and respond to them. But anyway, but he's going to join us at 7 p.m., so we're going to get into that conversation. All right, so let me see here. I got to text him back because I think he got the information wrong. Let me just go ahead and open up the mic to my brother in California, which that's another topic. There's always a topic about California. That's my home. And do plan on going back to visit very soon. Say hello to Mr. Timon Ship. What's up, my brother Timon? How you doing? And Happy New Year.
What's going on, Mike?
All right, man. Just trying to get
Happy
things in order, get everybody here on the board. Thank you. Same to you, man. Trying to get everybody here and situated on the board. As I mentioned, we have some topics and some stories we're going to talk about. And then we have a guest at 7 p.m. I need to text him back because I think he got the time frame mixed up. So let me text him back. So what'd you do this New Year's Eve? I know I stayed home.
We stayed home. My girl cooked a great dinner. Actually, two dinners. New Year's Eve dinner, and then she cooked New Year's Day dinner with black eyed peas and collard greens, and cornbread, fried cheese, macaroni and cheese, and candy jams. You know,
you had that
got
New Year's Eve?
Day. We had that for New Year's Day. With the
With the
black eyed peas and all that stuff. Yeah. Did the
All right. You know, we were on air last Saturday for New Year's Day, and I have to ask you, do you remember what the old saying is, why you should have collard greens and black eyed peas? What is it supposed to be for the next year?
Well, it'd be good luck.
Say that again?
Supposed to be good luck.
Yeah, I think, right, good luck and also prosperity or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
There's so many ways that they say it. So you have to have that every New Year's, at least in the black community. That's, you know, what we're always taught.
It's part of black culture.
Yeah, that's part of black culture. Exactly.
Yeah.
Part of black culture. You say that to anybody else, be like, but I eat black eyed peas all the time. No,
well, my Jewish buddy knew about it.
Oh, okay.
My Jewish cat, he knew about it. He knew about black eyed peas. He even asked me, did you have the black eyed peas? I said, yeah, we did. Yeah, we sure did.
We did. Fantastic. Well, look, I'm trying to see, where is Janet? Let me see where she's at, because I got to have the lady in the house. I'm texting her now. I just text our guest, so he did have the hour mixed up, so he will be joining us at 7.
I'm actually on my way to, I'm going to do some bowling. So they signed me up to do some bowling, so that's why I was calling you early. Get on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, you're bowling.
You know,
yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Now you got your own ball and shoes and everything. Are you
my girl does. She kicked my ass. Shit, three straight games. Her mama bowled and her daddy used to bowl, and she got two balls. You know, I have two balls. I said, I have two balls too.
Now the moment she said she has two balls, I would have been like, what? No, I'd be like, strip down. I didn't
So she took me out there and slayed my butt. She said, are you going to be okay with that? And I said, hey, as long as you continue to allow me to watch you beautiful booty as you roll down that day, and I'm good. You can beat me every day. I'm okay.
You would throw gutter balls on purpose.
Yeah.
You would throw gutter balls on purpose.
Yeah. You can beat me all day.
Well, and I'm gonna get to the topics. But speaking of bowling, I you know, as a kid, I would do it. You know, our family would bowl, and then I remember I went to a bowling alley one night, and I just felt like bowling. Went by myself because I hadn't done it in a while, and I used to do it with my son when he was younger. And it was so crazy because I was in a lane over from where there was a bowling league going on. And they like. And you know, it was crazy. I hit two spares, and I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm doing okay." And they said, "Wow, you can bowl." I said, "That was luck." They said, "You want to join the league?" And they talked me into it. And man, I'm telling I started that night. They talked me into it. I started that night. I hit two strikes in a row. This is a true story.
There you go.
They're like, "Oh, wow, you're a professional." I'm like, "No, that was luck." I wasn't lying. Mm-hmm. Because the next couple of throws were gutter balls. They kind of looked at me crazy. So I started picking up on my game and started really going more often and practicing and everything. And I finally invested into a bowling ball. You know, and it is better if you get in the bowling. It is better to have your own ball instead of having to search for
and
one.
Your own shoes.
Your own shoes, right. Yeah. It is much better. You know, and once I got my own ball and they drilled the hole to fit my hand and all that good stuff, the weight I wanted, you know, I really enjoy it. Yeah. I have an aunt who was very good, was in a bunch of leagues and won some tournaments in Milwaukee.
Yeah, her mom and dad was really good.
Right. So let's get to the topics. One thing I want to look at is, you know, they say they go in pairs. And the other week we spoke about Madden, which he was a celebrity in the sports world, not in the movie or type thing. But John Madden passed away at the time. Right. They said they didn't know what the cause of death was. Betty White, who was just weeks away from her 100th birthday, just weeks away, which would have been the 17th.
Yeah, they asked, "Do you want to get to 100? She said, "No, I'm cool. I'm good. 99.
You know, and imagine all the things she's seen for 99 years.
Well, I'll tell you this about her. Can you imagine that she started doing television in her 20s, okay? In her 20s. She has never had to worry about a job or anybody taking anything from her. Whereas if you say Diane Carroll, who died in her 80s, okay, you see, Sidney Poitier, Betty White didn't have to go through that. Yeah, you had to deal with white men, but you didn't have to deal with not working. She worked as an actress from her 20s. She had about a 70-year run, bruh. 70 years.
Right. That is true.
She didn't have to worry about no – discrimination, no nothing. You're
That's
almost
a good
100
point,
years old.
That's a good point. She almost hit to 100.
Carol,
years.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but you're right. She started at the age of 20. And
she was on the very first, just like Milton Berle, she was on the first television shows to come out.
So you say,
okay,
black
folks weren't even allowed.
Black folks
weren't even nowhere around
for
television. You couldn't even, Step and Fetches, somebody, or with my girl from Gone with the Wind, you probably saw. But other than that, you know, you didn't really see black folks working, you know, they had to struggle. Whereas Betty White didn't have no struggle. None
of you know, Bob never thought
you think about it.
Let me quickly open up the mic, though, of co-host Miss Janet Davis. Happy Saturday, Janet. How you doing?
Oh, great. How are you? Sorry for the delay. I got caught up in traffic. Hi, Tyron.
Oh, hey, Janet. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah. And by the way, for everybody that's listening, you're going to hear Happy New Year's for the next 2 weeks. Okay, so get ready for it, because you know that's what happens every year. You're going to run into somebody in the middle of summer that you ain't seen since 2021, and you're going to be like, oh, Happy New Year. I didn't get a chance to tell you. But that's the only holiday you hear people say happy, happy, happy for months to come. But anyway, Janet, well, I'm glad that you made it and got out of traffic. But did you hear what Tommy was just saying, which is an interesting point about, because we're about to speak on the death of Mr. Sidney Poitier. And he just said how Betty White had been in the movie industry since she was 20 years old. She lived to be 99, and she never had to deal with the things that Sidney Poitier and also Diane Carroll and quite a few others had to deal with. Yeah. To be in the industry. Definitely.
No. True.
Yeah, because Sidney Poitier, he broke the barrier as far as a black person being in movies and playing an important role instead of a cook or a butler or, you know, somebody in the, in the field.
Mm-hmm. When he came to America, he couldn't read. He could not read he got here. He was taught to read. I know when I read his book, it said that he was taught to read by a Jewish cat, but the girl who told me last night at the lounge told me it was her uncle who taught Sidney Poitier how to read, because her uncle, the restaurant that he was working in for a busboy, I guess the uncle owned it or worked in it or something like that. But over in New York. So that's how he learned to read. Yeah, he couldn't read. You know, and, you know,
wasn't he from Jamaica or something?
He's from the Bahamas. Now, because Harry Belafonte is from Trinidad. Yeah. And that's because they were honoring him, I think, in the Bahamas. And they were making the announcement that he had passed away because they were honoring him.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me intervene for a minute, because here's something that I find interesting. I just typed in, this is a conflict of what they're saying. They list as children, and I believe this is Wikipedia, you know, and so you can't always believe Wikipedia, but it says Sidney Poitier was a Bohemian American actor, but when it comes down here where it says born, it says February 20th, 1927, Miami, Florida. So something there ain't right.
Yes. So when he got
here, he didn't come over here until he was like 12, I think.
Yeah, because when he got here, he was in Miami, and as he, I think when he turned like 15, 16, he went to New York.
Right.
Yeah, because matter of fact, the first woman that he married, she was black.
Mm-hmm.
He has children by her, his first wife. And then the second wife is white that he has the other children by.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but also, you know, there's a book called 13 Different Ways of Looking at a Black Man, written by Henry Louis Gates. And it has, how there was a rival between Harry Belafonte and Sidney.
That's right.
Because Harry Belafonte said, I turned down roles that Sidney took. He said, I could have had those roles, but I don't do that type of stuff. And yet, but those roles, Sidney Poitier turned them into iconic roles, and he blew up. And he blew
that's
up
right.
Well,
let's
so
talk about
than
this,
Harry
you know,
Belafonte.
Harry, you gotta be kicking yourself in the ass right about now, because, even back then, because when you look at the movies that Sidney Poitier turned into classics, To Serve with Love, Guess Who's Coming? Okay, in 1967, To Serve with Love, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, In the Heat of the Night, which that is one of my favorites, because I'm gonna go back to that, Lilies of the Field, The Defiant Ones, A Raisin in the Sun. Okay, I mean, that's just the name. Yeah, that's just the, and well, wait a minute, it goes on. They called me Mr. Tibbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know all his movies. I used to follow him because you didn't have too many black actors at the time that you could look up to, you know. And so you had the, like
okay.
you said, the Lena Horne, the Diane Carrolls and people like that, that you, and Sidney Poitier and Helba Elfante.
Weird.
But other than that, it wasn't hardly anybody else, you know. I
and
mean,
you
had Mom's Baby and Red Fox comedy.
Right. No, and you didn't. In fact, and you didn't. In movies, you didn't have many leading roles for blacks back in that era, right? You didn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually, and I mean, we're talking about the 1960s, you know, the mid-60s and everything. You know, later on in the 70s, you started having your black exploitation movies, you know, which became popular, of course. But reading off those titles right there, to this day, those movies are still watched and praised.
Yeah.
You can go to a lot of cable channels, and I'm pretty sure since it's happened, I bet you there's a couple of cable channels somewhere that are playing, you know, a marathon of Sidney Poitier movies. It's going to bring in,
even the ones,
you know,
even the ones he directed, they're going to be showing them.
Mm-hmm.
So he directed Stir Crazy and Let's Do It Again. And Uptown Saturday Night. Now, when he did Stir Crazy, the funny part is that Sidney used to walk out of the room when Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder were on stage because he said he couldn't hold. He said he was laughing so damn hard. He said, man, I couldn't sit in the room. And he said Richard was acting such a fool, and Rich was high. Now, you got to understand.
And Gene Wilder
was high
too.
On cocaine.
Yeah. Because I still like those movies. It takes a lot to get me to laugh, but when Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor hooked up, you would cry. You were laughing so hard.
And let me tell you, Let's Do It Again is a classic. With Jimmy J.J. Walker, I mean, John Amos. When John Amos was on Good Times, that was when he went off of Good Times, that's when I stopped watching Good Times. So John Amos reminded me, he was like everybody's father in the ghetto. You know, he was everybody's dad. And so when you see him in Let's Do It Again, oh my God, you are crying. him and Kyle, when Sidney Poitier and they go into in Uptown Saturday Night, when they go in to get Big Percy and Little Seymour. Classic. We're looking for Seymour Pettigrew. Talk about his mama. Yeah. Seymour, your mama.
Right.
Funny. Yeah,
and you know that you mentioned it says here that 40-year director several films, the most successful being the Richard Pryor Gene Wilder comedy Uptown Stir Crazy in 1980, which for many years was the highest grossing film directed by a person of African descent. His feature film directorial debut in 1972 was the Western Buck and the Preacher, in which Poitier also starred along with Harry Belafonte. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, that was a great movie.
That's crazy. And, you know, and also going back to what you said about Good Times, when you look at John Amos, and I agree with you. Once he left it, it was the glue of the show. The father figure was removed from the show. They tried to put, you know, a boyfriend in, a Thelma or whatever, a husband or whatever the case may be. No, I think at that time he was still in. But, you know, and then they tried to make J.J., you know, try to be the man of the house type thing. You know, and all that type of crap. But the thing is that when John Amos left, you know, for that era,
he was like the
Bill Cosby of the Cosby Show family. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But
how could he remove Bill Cosby?
He asked to be killed off.
That's
right.
Killed off because they because they tried to make the show about J.J. Walker because Dynamite, and it's like, dude, you know, Florence and John Amos were Broadway actors, and they were like,
right.
I'm not getting ready to bow to this fool. He ain't no, you know. So that's when they would, you know, John's like, look, do you need it? I'm not going to, y'all going to, either we going to make, continue to push this, or y'all got to get rid of me, because I'm gone.
I'm sorry.
That was Esther Rowe.
Yeah, Esther Rowe.
Yeah. It was Esther Rowe.
Florence. Yeah, but her name was, wasn't it Florence?
No, it wasn't Florence. Her name was Florence. Wait a minute.
What was her name on the show, though?
What was her name? Because I know there was Florence in
Florida,
right? Florence was the name of the maid in the Jeffersons, right?
Right.
She's still around.
Right. So Florence was the maid in the Jeffersons. Florida was the character in Good Times. So now we got that right. But you know what I'm glad to see is that I'm pulling up a photo here of where Sidney Poitier is being awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama in August 2000.
Right. Right.
That, you know, and like you said, 2009, after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, one of my favorite scenes, and I have to say, and some folks might say, oh, you racist, Michael, to say that's one of your favorite scenes to ever see him do. It was because it was something that at that time, probably a lot of uproar about that scene, and that was in, I believe it was In the Heat of the Night, yeah.
Oh, when he slapped homeboy back?
When he slapped the white man. I know that people in movie theaters around the country gasp.
But
this guy who came from New York down into the South, and they was trying to really railroad him, you know. But
right.
then,
that scene in the movie, and we're talking about the 1960s, right?
Right, and it was actually right before the Civil Rights Bill was signed.
Thank you.
When that movie came out, it was either 64, 67.
And you actually have a scene, because you look at scenes in movies, and there are some scenes they take out of movies because they say, well, we don't want to cause no uproar. But in 1967, they actually put a black man slapping a white man on the big screen. And when I first saw that,
they call it the heat of the night.
That, to me, is one of the most unbelievable scenes, especially for that era.
Mm-hmm.
For that era, that is unbelievable. But it got him, you know, it just kept going. It's sad.
And do you know the spinoff from that? The spinoff from that show, The Heat of the Night, the regular series that came on TV was really almost, I mean, the guy who was playing it was nothing like Sidney Poitier, but it still was good, you know?
You're talking about
Howard. But that's Howard. He was cold in Soldier Story. He was cold. That movie, the movie Soldier Story, amazing, you know? That was what's his name? The cat who played the Sarge? He was in Color Purple. He played Danny Glover's dad. Caesar.
Adolf Caesar.
Man, that dude was amazing. Died too young.
Yeah, I believe that was his name. He had a first and last name that just you would be like, you got to be kidding me. That's his real name, but yeah, that was his name.
I played Soldier Story in Santa Monica at the Morgan Whitson Theater. I played Robert Townsend's role. And the writer who wrote Soldier Story, I'm blanking on his name, but he came out to the show to see us, and he really loved it. But yeah, it was great. Yeah, but that's an iconic movie. I don't know if you saw that. Samuel L. was in there too. At the last part, when they were finally allowing them to go to war, you had what's her name, the dude to play Wookiee, who was in one of the Die Hard flicks. You also had, like I said, Robert Townsend, and what's my girl's name? Sings. She played the blues singer. Not Aretha Franklin, but her what's her name? Who sang the blues cut? In Soldier Story. She's you know her, well known. She did that one tune with she. Patti LaBelle, there you go.
Yeah.
Patti LaBelle, damn that blues tune in Soldier Story.
Right.
Homegirl
right.
sang the mess out of that tut, man. I mean, it was down home. That Soldier Story was down home, man. I forget
that
the record, but it was great. It was just a great piece. And they never put anything else together like that, you know. And Denzel was off the chain. Denzel against Caesar, Adolf Caesar.
Perfect. That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, look,
so
I got a caller.
Let me let this caller chime in real quick. I believe I know this is 346-274. Their mic is open. How you doing, my sister?
Hello, everybody. How are you?
Long-lost co-host, Cotton Campbell.
I am here and so happy to be here.
Well,
glad
that
you're
here. I understand you were under the weather. You feeling better?
I am feeling a lot better. I have bronchitis, so I finally got a good inhaler. You know, that's just no joke, but it seems like everybody around me is sick. So, everybody's
right.
sick from something different. So,
what inhaler did you get, Todd?
Albuterol.
I was going to say Pro Air is pretty good. Albuterol is all right, but I use that in the nebulizer. But Dunap is even better when you need to open up the fat. It's a bronchial inhibitor along with Albuterol. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I probably should try that too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's just see.
Yeah, I'm glad you're feeling better. Thank you for being able to join in. The time is now 6:33. Our guest is going to be joining us at the top of the hour at 7, so I want to go ahead and try to get this through the show. And Timon has some plans coming up at the top of the hour, so let's try to go ahead and keep it moving. But all condolences to the Poitier family. Sidney Poitier, who really paved the way for a lot of black actors, gone at the age of 94. All right, so I want to move on to another topic. Yesterday, and we've been talking about this case, and yesterday the judge read the sentence for the three individuals who shot and killed Ahmaud Arbery.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I don't know if you guys follow it, but I've become more and more interested in watching real court cases and not that fake shit on TV, okay? Judge Judy and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Ahmaud Arbery's killer is sentenced to life in prison for 25-year-old black man's murder. It says here, three white men who chased and murdered 25-year-old black jogger Ahmaud Arbery in South Georgia was the two of us on the air live in, were sentenced to life in prison Friday, with two having no chance of parole. Travis McMichael,
and that's the father and son.
That's what I'm about to read. Travis McMichael, 35, his father, Gregory McMichael, 66, and neighbor William Roddy Bryant were convicted in November, all right, which we know. Judge Timothy Walmsley sentenced the McMichaels to life in prison without the possibility of parole, while Bryant was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole. The 52-year-old will be eligible for parole under Georgia law only after he has served 30 years in prison because he was convicted of serious violent felonies. Now, as I said, I don't know if you guys,
old man.
Yeah, but I don't know if you guys follow this, but this was a very, very serious case, at least to me. And the verdict spoke volumes. The verdict really spoke volumes. And there are some people who are still mad at, or that are mad as hell because the judge gave that type of sentence. But what I commend the judge on is that the fact that he said that he went back and looked at the video and listened to the things that the defendant said during the video. After the situation, keep in mind it was a while before they were actually arrested, and they were trying to make their reason for killing Ahmaud legitimate, right? But I like what this judge did. He said, you know, the judge was saying that they really convicted themselves on their statement. They really did. And I really want you guys, if you haven't followed the case, go back, go to TV, look at some of the clips, especially during the sentencing, of what the judge said. And I have to say, this was one of the best judges I've ever seen. The judge during the Rittenhouse trial is yelling and fussing with the prosecutor and everything. There was a lot of questions about that. The judge who handled the shooting of the young man who was shot by the officer instead of the taser, Wright. She was really calm and everything and handled a good case. But you do have some good judges, fortunately. And at this point in time, that's what we need. Judges that are going to make it fair on the defensive side and the prosecution side. And I think this judge did an absolute fantastic job. And when he made the decision of how much time, see, the jury doesn't pick what the time they're going to spend in jail. They just find them guilty of the crime. In some states, it varies. It could be the jury or it could be the judge. But in this case, this judge said, I don't buy their story, basically. And they lied, and they called him a rat. He was like a rat trap. He looked at all those statements and everything, which basically was a racial statement in a sense. If you think about it, like a rat trap. I don't know what he did. I can't really say for sure he stole something, but we were trying to stop him before he did. Speculation of a black man. So,
can I say something?
Go ahead.
Yes. The judge said he looked at the video, and while watching the videos and all these white people came into the house, came left out night and day, and nothing ever happened. Ahmaud Arbery running down the street, and they decide to chase him. He's just running. He didn't have anything in his hand, and they decided they had to get him. And that's why the judge did the verdict that he did as far as the life in prison without parole. And I thought that was a good thing, because you cannot, just because of the color of a person's skin, convict them.
Well, right, and the thing is, And also the thing is that where you can't, and which the judge also said is that where, you know, it's sad that in this society, you know, the way we look at things, and he actually said that when he looked at, or when he looked at the videos, listened to some of the statements and comments that the defendants made shortly after the shooting of Ahmaud, they turned around and walked away. They didn't try to give aid. If it was an accident, you're supposed to give aid, right? Even if you have a car accident and you run into the back of somebody's car, you're not supposed to drive away. That's a crime. That is a crime. Now, you done shot somebody, and they're laying dead in the street, and you walk away. You don't go over. If it was an accident, you would try to get aid.
Why he was laying on the ground, I think the son or the father called him a snitcher, and they left that part out. But that, they did. Someone did say that, you know.
So
right.
And last,
so you're
gonna
let somebody bleed out on the ground because they're a nigger.
Right. And the
last
thing,
there were 11 guys on the jury. There were 11 guys on the 11 white dudes on the jury.
Uh-huh.
Also, once the prosecutor got to interviewing, you know, her the guys interviewed both of them. I mean, once he interviewed the son, the prosecutor did. They were done. They sealed their own fate. There was nothing else to even
mm-hmm.
talk about, because
mm-hmm.
you can't. Why? What do you need a shotgun for? Well, we were. You know, she said, "Did you feel threatened?" Well, no. Did he have a weapon? No, he did not. You guys are done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
right.
he was jogging down the street. They got video of him going through a house, but he didn't take
anything.
He didn't commit a crime.
He hadn't.
And I thought about all
crime.
The times I went through houses and could have been shot, you know, because that's something that people just normally do, especially when it's a new subdivision. You go in, you look around, you see what's different. You know, you might be interested in that.
Well, you know, also they had to change this case because, you know, you're in Georgia, okay? Georgia, if you know the history of Georgia and all the
right.
people that have died, especially black people, but the incidents between black and white, you got Florida,
mm-hmm.
you got Alabama, all of that.
Well,
they had to get over this.
Yeah, this was the penal state. Back when there was the 13 colonies, this is the state that you came to. They would transfer your ass here to try you. You
right.
all know that, right? Okay, this was the penal state. This is where if you committed a major crime, whether it be in South Carolina or North Carolina or whatever part of that colony, you were transferred here. But the thing is, what I want to say is this too, and then I want to get you guys opinion on something. What I like that the judge said also, I truly recommend that you watch what the judge says and his reaction. What he did was he said, Ahmaud Arbery, this whole thing was 5 minutes in time. He said, what I'm going to do, I'm going to stop talking for 1 minute. And he did. The courtroom was quiet for one whole minute. And then he said, that's a fraction of the time this young man was hunted down. And that 1 minute felt like forever. You think about 5 minutes of him running for his life. And then he turned around and said what his mother said, that once they could not scare him it wasn't just scare, but was something else that it did. I know what they wanted to do. I'm just saying what the judge said. He was saying what the mother said, that she said that since they saw they could not scare him or intimidate him, instead they killed him. That's what he said. The judge repeated exactly what the mother said in the closing witness impact statement. And the judge repeated that. That, to me, was so unbelievable for a judge to take a witness impact statement and use it in his closing statement on his sentencing. That was great. Now, my question to you guys is this. he did do something different with the gentleman who Roddy, whatever, Brian, he did not sentence him as harshly. He still could face, I mean, he's still looking at 20 years, as Janet said, but he is eligible for parole out of the three. He's the only one. Now, let me ask you this, Timon. Eligible for parole could be after the first, what, 7 years?
He's,
No, he doesn't have to. No, he can be out on parole before the 20 years. Parole could come before the
really, but you know what? They're facing federal charges. They're facing federal hate charges right now, too, though. They ain't going nowhere.
Right. They're facing that. But I'm just saying that where you can come up for parole before if federal hate charges
go down, it won't matter what he did because they're going to get you're going to get a double whammy. So even if you came up for parole because they're getting ready to go next week, I think it's coming up in a month or so. They're going to be going in for federal hate charges.
But here's the point.
Hold on
for a minute. The question I'm trying to ask, and we might need to research it, is that this judge did something, and he said, in the case of Roddy, that the thing is that he was found guilty, but the thing is that the judge looked at it where, he really didn't kill him had he not impeded Ahmad's possible exit from being, you know, he pulled his truck up and blocked him in. That's where he screwed up, of blocking him in.
But he also didn't
He
also didn't stop it, though. He didn't stop it.
Well, no. Let's leave that out because those guys had guns. He didn't. The thing is that where he was convicted of
it. Because he didn't know they had guns.
Right, but my point is this, okay, follow my point. He was convicted due to the fact that the video shows that in his own statements, he cut him off. Had he not cut him off, he probably could have escaped. That probably would not have happened. That's why he is being charged, because he is an accessory to a murder, correct? So that's how come the judge wasn't as hard on him. If you read where the prosecution had all these charges on him, the judge dropped a bunch of those as far as sentencing goes, as far as him doing time on all that. But he said, and he's the only one, as we know, that is eligible for parole. It could have went the other way. So, him recording it and videotaping it, that's okay. And the truth of the matter, had he not, they probably would have got away. And I think that's why the judge said, you know what, I'm going to make it a little bit easier on you, because the thing is that where I cannot stop the fact that you were convicted of a crime, because you were convicted by a jury of your peers. But I can make it where you are not going to be looking at life in prison without parole, give you an opportunity to have a chance to get out of prison. But do you think that that was fair enough for him is my question. Do you think he should have got the same as the other two, or do you think that what the judge gave him was right, give him the opportunity to make parole? And again, I say there are people who are sentenced 20 years and they do get out on parole before their 20 years based on good behavior or whatever.
Yeah, but he's not. Was it a good thing to do to him? Maybe. You know, but still, he's going to do 30 years. Because because once they finish, and just hold off on his parole thing. Don't even pay attention to that, because he got to go through that federal hate charge, okay? Once they look at him for what he did, for what they did, one, you filmed it, and you didn't stop it. So you were complicit in what you were doing. You were in on it. You may didn't pull the trigger, but you sure helped him kill him. You didn't say, hey, man, don't do that. Hey, man, you, oh, I tried to stop. No, you didn't do that. You went along with it. And matter of fact, you filmed it. So basically, you guys screwed yourselves. And no, and should he have gotten life? Yeah, he should have got straight life because he was involved
but,
in it.
But you
but
know what?
Same like they did, but wait a minute, but same like they did in Las Vegas, same thing they did in Las Vegas when the two white cats, one of them went and molested their seven-year-old black girl. And the white dude didn't stop him from molesting him, you see. And by him not stopping him, he should have went, to me, he should have went to jail. But he didn't.
Okay, so that's a prime example to what I'm saying. That's a prime example to what I'm saying is that where, right, he should have stopped that molestation of that black, that little black girl automatically. It should have been because here's this little black girl with this white man. You know that that looks wrong. But you can't blame Roddy for videotaping. Like I said, where the judge made the difference. And I wish everybody that speaking would have seen and heard what he said. But what if, with the federal charges, that they find him not guilty, but he gets a pass on it, and somebody got music in the background, please mute yourself because your music is coming through and disrupting the show. You put yourself on mute.
Hello.
Whoever.
Hello. Okay, I'm going to go to the board and meet you
because it is disrupting the show. We can't hear ourselves. All right, thank you. Okay, but so what I'm saying is that where you got a point. He's still dealing with those federal hate charges. But what if he's found not guilty of him being part of the hate charge? Because he did not pull the trigger. He didn't chase him. He did.
He didn't
follow and videotape, and he did block the route of him, of Ahmad. But what if that jury says, well, you know what, we're not going to find him guilty on that because he wasn't really the initial.
Not
going to
happen.
That's
homie. Not going to happen. You can let that go. That ain't going to happen. He's done.
Well, he should have gotten as much time as everybody else because. Number one, the only reason why he was even recording is so they could have something to look at and laugh at. It wasn't because, oh, let me record this so that I can give it to the police and make sure that this young man is going to be safe. That's not. He should have gotten the exact same time because, as you stated earlier, he is just as guilty. He may not have pulled the trigger, but he still participated in the crime.
And also, let us not forget, they didn't go to jail for 3 months. Wait a minute, Mike. Didn't nobody
know anything
about this for 3 months because the prosecutor who was friends with the police officer and everything covered for their ass.
Tried to cover
yeah, we
she's in trouble right
you.
Now. She's in trouble right
and
now.
And she's supposed to get
that.
5 years. They talk about giving her 5 years in prison.
Right. And Rodney Bryant did not turn that information over right away. The video.
Mm-mm.
He didn't do that right away. You know,
no.
He didn't.
Right. But that's the thing I'm just trying to say is this, is that we've seen some crazy shit happen in courts. We've seen some crazy stuff happen in trials and cases. This is federal. And Grimm, like his lawyer was trying to save his ass. If it wasn't for Rodney Bryant, we probably wouldn't even know about it. That's a fact. Had he not videotaped it,
for sure.
And I can say it was shared with amongst the folks in the neighborhood, you know, on their pages or whatever, you know. And that's how it escaped and it got out to see the actual video of what he got. Because really, as you said, the prosecutor at the time was trying to cover it up. She's being charged. Okay, we know that. That's a fact. But in my opinion, I think, and like Charles Barkley says, I may be wrong, but I doubt it. I think that Rodney is going to get probably a little special treatment this go around in the federal case, due to the fact that if it wasn't for his screw up, we wouldn't have known that side of it. That's how come the judge did what he did. Keep in mind, the judge said, well, you were found guilty of being part of this crime, though you were not the main subject of the crime. You were not the shooter. You were not the father or son. You did not participate in this crime at the level that they did. You didn't cover up. He made some statements, you know, that were wrong, but he did come forward and started working with law enforcement to try to clear his ass. But his ass was already in a sling. You follow me? It was already in a sling because the fact that even in his own testimony of him blocking the route, again, that was where he got his ass in trouble. Had he just stayed back in his truck and videotaped and not moved to block off Ahmaud Arbery, he would not be in jail to this day. Had he just been a bystander, he would not be in jail. He would be like, hey, I just like you and me can see anything on the street.
I think they'd have got him, Mike. They'd have got him.
I don't think so. I think that was his wrong, because he didn't go to the police either.
He didn't go to the police either.
Right.
No. Well,
after all this came out about the video and what happened, and they were in trouble, that he gave up the video. All before that, he didn't do it.
No.
Well, that too. So that's okay. So that's two things. He blocked off Aubrey's possible route, and he also withheld evidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
According to the video that I saw is that he did, really the cops screwed up because they let him leave the scene of the crime. They had to go, and one sergeant said, no, go pick him up. Yeah, he lives right around the corner. So they screwed up. That's on body cam. They let him leave.
Well, they did the same thing with the kid, and they killed the nine people and when they shot him in the church. Okay, they took him to Burger King because he was hungry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He shot nine people. And that's in the South, too.
Okay. Yeah.
So somebody else
had some money and didn't even know it was counterfeit, hit his neck, knee on the neck, and get suffocated and die.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's wrap this topic up because it is an interesting one, and I truly appreciate you guys with your point of view. We have to see what's going to happen in the verdict on this because, I'm sorry, I don't mean the verdict. We already know how much time the McMichaels are going to spend. Of course, they're going to try to appeal the sentencing. I think those two are gone in the federal hate law. And everything. I think that Roddy Bryant might, I'm not saying for sure, but I think he might get a little leniency due to the fact that his screw up let us see what really happened. It really did. His screw up of videotaping it and doing what he did. Because had it not been a videotape, they could have came up with any kind of narrative of what went down, and Ahmaud Arbery would just been dead and end the story. If you really think about it. Okay? That's how I look at it. All right. Okay, so I believe our guest is going to be joining us momentarily. So you guys... time sure does go by fast. We have 2 minutes before 7 p.m. So what I want to do is just get a closing comment. So what do you think is going to happen when it goes to the federal? Do you think that they're going to give him leniency on it, or do you think he's going to probably get a little less? And maybe, even though, like you said, he's 50-something years old, and we have to look into the fact that can he get parole before the 20 years? I believe he can, because you can go before the parole board. My understanding now, I have to look that up before your sentence is up and get out here.
They did say 7 years when you have a possibility of parole, but the first judge already
72 years.
And I'm quite sure it won't happen in 7. That's
72,
what I'm
happening. 7 to 10 years, I think, and it depends on the state. So, and this is Georgia, and Georgia has some crazy laws. So we'll have to look into that and come back to it next week. And I'm going to try to look at it now and see if I can find out any information on it. Let's see. Well, Simon, you already told me you don't think he's going to be able to make parole day. He's going to do the whole 20, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think, there's no reason to allow him out after the severity of the crime that was committed. There's no reason,
right.
No matter what he did. Why would I, you were in on it. You're the third guy. So,
and didn't even have to be the third guy, but he jumped in his car to participate.
Right.
Right.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Interesting.
I don't think he's gonna get parole. I don't think they're gonna get, because imagine what happens to the city, when all of these things are happening. Imagine if they let that man go early. He may not make it.
Well, he already moved out of the town. He already moved out of he already moved. He moved when this whole thing went down. He's lost his house. Okay. And see, and that's the thing is that, well, when these type of things happen, those folks have to move quickly out of the neighborhood. They have to come up with money for defense. Granted, some folks can go and get, a GoFundMe and everything. But this individual, he done lost his house and everything.
He's gonna get a whole new facelift, because that don't change what you look like. People still remember you when you done something. No matter where you go, just like George Zimmerman, we know what he looked like.
Right, and they shut down their GoFundMe defense thing because it was a criminal crime. You can't raise money off of a crime like that. GoFundMe shut it down.
Well, yeah, that's true. It did shut it down. Yeah, they definitely did. In fact, the prosecuting attorney said that they want to make sure after the sentencing, to make sure that the family does not, or neither one of the father or son or Roddy are able to make money off of this case, whether it's a TV or a book deal, but the judge said need to give it to him more in a more of a written statement, a professional form, for him to make that decision, which I think that's good for them to make that request. Okay, I think that's good. Wow. Okay, so look, let us go ahead and take a music break. These stories and things that we can talk about all night long. Hey, you guys, I've been playing some old school tracks for the past few weeks and wondering if you know who the artist is and the name of the songs. And I want to give away a gift card, whoever can name all of them, every last one of them, all right? I'm going to keep playing them each week because, see, back in the day, you used to party to some instrumental songs and no words, no lyrics or anything. But at that house party, you will party your ass off to it. So let's take this music break with this old school classic. You're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, with my co-host, Janet Davis, Cotton Campbell, and all the way in, well, Cotton's in Kansas City, right? Kansas, okay. From Kansas City, Cotton Campbell in Los Angeles, California, Mr. Time and Ship. And we'll be back with our special guest, Mr. Edward Morgan. This is the TMGS. I guess I need to take myself off of mute since I didn't mute myself earlier. Welcome back to the TMGS with Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. And that's one of those cuts that I know when I was a kid now. I'm talking about when I was a kid because that goes back to the 70s. But I've been playing a lot of the old school instrumentals, as I said, that didn't have any lyrics. Just had a funky groove and used to get down and get down to it. And wonder if anybody can name any of those songs, the song or the artist. And if you can name them, I have a gift card for you. All right? Got a gift card. If you want it. But I'm going to keep on doing that. All right, so we're back. And I want to bring in our guest, our special guest. We've had him on the show before. And what he did is so interesting, and what he taught us before was so, I mean, I started researching it and researching it. You know, when it comes to the things that God has put on this planet that we take for granted, that we depend on, we never think about it. And last week or a week or so, I was watching this documentary about bees. And how they are so important to not just the things that we eat and everything, but just the economy and everything. How they're important to what we eat, you know, just everything. And their numbers are diminishing worldwide, not just here in the United States, but everywhere, in Chile and everything. And, you know, we import from countries. And I thought about this brother, and I said, wow, it'd be great to have him come back on the show. And we got into a conversation about it, and then he said, yeah, I'll come back on and share what he knows about it. So please, you guys, put your hands together for our guest, Mr. Edward Morgan. How you doing, Edward?
Hey.
Come on, put your hands together, Edward.
Yay.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me open up his mic. Boom, there he is.
Thank you.
Edward,
you
there?
Thank you for having me back. Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
No problem. Mm-hmm. Let me also say, I remember that that song. I cannot name the artist, but I do remember shaking, dancing on the floor to that song. So we may be the same age.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you, I'll be 60 in March.
Okay, well, I'll be 56 on the 23rd.
Okay, so we're just 4 years apart. So you ought to know that song. And before the show ends, I'm going to try to see if I can squeeze in a couple of more that I've played and just give them short segments of them, because I'm going to go ahead and do this until March, play some of these instrumentals, and I have a great gift card for whoever can name all of them. So, Janet, you remember last week I played little segments, so I'm going to try to see if I can do that. But it depends on how deep this conversation goes. Edward, you and I had a conversation the other night, and I'll share with you what I saw and what I read about how important it is about bees. But before we get into that conversation, for those who weren't able to chime in or didn't have a chance to hear the first time on the show, introduce yourself and tell them what you do before we get into the meat of the conversation.
So, thank you. So, my name is Edward Morgan. I live in Marietta, Georgia, and I am a beekeeper / farmer. I have about 55 hives in two states, and I probably have about four locations with bees in metro Atlanta. And what I also do is I have an Airbnb experience on the Airbnb platform, and I explain the relationship to people, the relationship between humans and bees. And it lasts about anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours. So, but in addition to that, I do have a full-time job. I am a food service director at a retirement community. But the bee business has open up to many different things. So I sell honey, I do bee extractions from people's homes or their yards. I teach classes. I sell bees. I sell queens. I sell chicken eggs. I raise goats. And next on the agenda will probably be breed German shepherds here shortly, as soon as the female goes into heat. And then one day I expect to expand into peacocks, believe it or not.
Okay.
So let me get this right, because my hearing could be a little off. I don't know. I thought at first, because this is a musical show, so I thought he said beat. I'm like, oh, he's a beekeeper. That means he keeps people's beats for him, right? Come on, honey. I'm like, what? What is this?
B.
B as in A, B, C, D. B, like in bugs. B. I like flowers.
Like
bees.
Honey.
Okay.
I like honeybees. And bumblebees.
Bumblebees.
Right.
This is very interesting because I've never met anybody who takes care of bees.
A beekeeper, right. Well, I like to call him the bee whisperer because, as I mentioned before, which I just recently located the past couple of months, but I lived less than a mile, well, really a half a mile away from his house. And I've seen his hives, and I've seen folks pull up and purchase the honey from him and the eggs, the chicken eggs. I have some of the honey still left because it's the type of honey that you don't try to eat it all at once. It's a delicacy, you know what I mean? Because it's pure honey. It doesn't have added salt added sugar and everything. Straight from the hive. Am I right, sir?
That is correct.
And then his chicken eggs, which impressed me, which I don't want to do the last show that we had him on again, but the thing is that a friend of mine actually had came by and stopped by his place and brought it to me and asked me, had you got this product from him before? I said, no. And they brought it to me, and they gave me some of the stuff that they bought from him, including the chicken eggs. And I'm looking, and I'm just amazed that here they gave me a brown egg, they gave me a green egg, one that was almost a blue egg. And I'm like, okay, well, what's with all these colors and everything? But Mr. Morgan challenged me to take a store-bought egg and compare it to his egg. And what I did, he said, cook it and take a look at the texture, you know, check out the texture and the color of it. He was on point. The texture was just so, I mean, it was just so light and moist, you know what I mean? The white was a white, you know, compared to the store-bought. The yellow was a sun yellow. And I'm not imagining this. I'm looking at this. I'm like, wow, because it's not a processed thing of, like a chicken farm that you normally would, you know, get from a grocery store, right? Where it's a production line. This is free range that he has.
Correct.
And then the honey was off the chain. Definitely was. So as I said, I was looking at a documentary and I was reading an article about, you know, how bees are so important to things that we take for granted that we eat every day, that we go to the grocery store every day. So I want to turn it over to him and explain to us what is the importance of the bees, of the things that they pollinate that we eat, and not just eat, but like flowers, plants, and everything. Give us a little rundown of they contribute to that we use every day.
So the honeybees, they pollinate fruits, probably about 130 fruits and vegetables that we eat. All fruits and vegetables are not pollinated by the honeybee. Like corn, for example, and wheat are pollinated by the wind. But when you start talking about like almonds, blueberries, watermelons, cantaloupe, things like that, tomatoes, they're pollinated by honeybees and some other bees. Bumblebees, I think they do it too, but they do it on a smaller scale. So honeybees, for those that don't know, have been imported into North America. It's funny because when the country was settled in the 1600s, the Indians used to call honeybees the white man's flies because there were no honeybees in North America. The honeybees have been imported because when they settled, there was nothing sweet to eat. So what happened, they imported honeybees from Africa, Germany, Italy, Russia, and China. So that's how the honeybee landed in North America. And over the years, we've domesticated them to the point where, you know, it's a huge operation. One of the big events that happens that will happen within the next 60 days is the almond pollination in California. There will be so many bees imported into that into almond groves. It's the biggest pollination event in the world, and it's going to happen within the next 60 days. If you didn't have bees, you would have no almonds, and you can't just pollinate almonds with the neighborhood bees. You have to have millions of bees. So there are commercial beekeepers that are preparing right now to transport their hives from Georgia, Florida, into California for the almond season. The spring will be here within the next 60, 70 days. So with all that said, the bees, when you called me, we were talking about the protest with the beekeepers in Chile. Someone else had sent me that same article that same day. They're protesting because there's a drought in Chile, and it's affecting the honeybees and the prices of honey. So they want the government to subsidize the honey industry in Chile. But some of the things over the years, you know, it's funny, depending on, you know, sometimes you have to watch who you get your information from. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I used to listen to this one specific station. And this guy used to call in and said the honeybees are being affected by the cell towers, right? And this is before I ever got into bees. And I was like, well, it makes sense. But I've been in bees for the last 5 years. Cell towers, when I've gone to conferences, that doesn't come up. So he's been spreading that misinformation for I don't know how long, but honeybees are being affected by herbicides, drought, pesticides, habitat destruction, global warming, and then they also have parasites. The number one parasite that's killing the bees right now, and this even affected my bees, is called the varroa mite, and it eats the fat body under the. You would never to the untrained eye, you would never see the parasite. When I first started, I was like, "Well, I don't see them," but the effects of them, the bees leave or they die. And when I first started, that's exactly what happened, but I never saw them. And then you start going to the conferences and people are teaching you that most likely you will never see them because they're under. Most of the time when you see a bee, you see the top portion of the bee. But the parasite is eating the fat body under the belly of the bee, and you would never see it. Now, I've seen it. I know what to look for now. And every once in a while, if you have a bad infestation, they will appear on top. So you have to treat them with chemicals. You have to treat them for that. So they've been on the scene for probably the last 30, 35 years. Some of the old-time beekeepers said they never had this problem. But they've been – the varroa mite has come from China. So it's been wreaking havoc on the bee population. And then there's another parasite called a small hive beetle. You can see them walking around in the actual beehive if you have a bad infestation. And then, you know, the birds eat them. Cicadas may eat them. If they leave the hive, hopefully they'll make it back because they may be hit by a car or something like that. So there are many things that affect the the population of the bees. So when you see a bee, don't kill it. Stop spraying Roundup, because that doesn't help. And the pesticides and the herbicides, the pesticides where you're trying to put that on your collard greens to kill a certain worm or a certain insect, that doesn't help. So the bees are being attacked from all different sides. So
okay,
that's what's happening with the bee population. It's not one thing. I just listed about 10 things where that's affecting the honeybee.
Let me ask you this, though, but in today's numbers, what is the population, just roughly throwing it out there? Because according to something I saw, now this probably been, and I agree with you, you got to be careful where you get the information, but the information I got was based on what you just said as far as, you know, the destruction of their, of, you know, where they live, global warming, you know, the temperature change and everything, because bees, you don't see them during the winter, but as seasons just change drastically, yeah, the cold is going to kill many of them off, right?
Not necessarily. Here's the crazy thing. Okay. Now, in many periodicals, many books, they say that bees don't come out when it's above, when it's below 55 degrees.
Okay.
And sometimes you may need to look at the bees to see what's going on in the world. You know, it was 40 degrees in Atlanta today, and I'm on several Facebook bee groups in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and all around the state, people were saying it's 35 degrees, it's 40 degrees, and the bees were out, and I had bees all over my yard. I was like, it's cold outside.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason today, the bees were out. Hmm. And I cannot explain it. And there have been many times where when it's cold and it's below 55, they don't come out. But for whatever reason today, the bees were out mm-hmm. in numbers. So maybe that's
is
an indication
possible?
That something is going on in the environment. But they were out,
that's
not
it.
Just in
exactly.
my yard.
Everywhere.
Also around the state.
Right. So is there a possibility that they're getting, I guess, I can't say immune, but I guess the word I'm looking for, adapting to weather, you know, or certain temperatures where they'll come out?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you at this point because, you know, they keep in mind, bees come from Russia. You know how cold it is there, or you have bees in North Dakota and Illinois, you know, they don't come out.
Mm-hmm.
And because a bee can stay in there for months. Now, when they come out, they're coming out to use the bathroom, and they're going to quickly forage for food for nectar or pollen.
To
and
use
then,
the bathroom?
You know, when the temperature... Oh,
I'm
yeah.
sorry, you said
they
use the bathroom?
I mean, they're coming out to poop. But they won't
have
any beehives.
So they don't have a toilet, I know. But they have the
right.
common sense to know, okay, I got to put this outside of my home, right? It's
right.
What
they will not. There's only one bee that poops in the actual beehive, and that is the queen. And then the queen doesn't
okay.
leave to go out to poop. Her court will clean up anything that she does. But the rest of them, they go outside.
Wow. See, y'all, this is educational. See, I didn't know that. That's the intelligence just of a bee. Okay. Interesting. So when it comes to the food and the things, which you already mentioned, there's hundreds of products that's out there that we depend on. When you said watermelon, I didn't want to make a joke because some folks would think I was being racial, but black folks, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, if that would have happened, you know, we always know they love watermelon. Like, we're the only people on the planet Earth who eat watermelon, you know. White folks can eat cantaloupe. We just eat watermelon. But anyway, the thing is that I'm trying to understand is that where – if that's, you know, the case of where if the population keeps diminishing, what kind of effect you think, or have you ever read upon how much of effect it's going to have on, you know, the farmers, the cost of it in the grocery stores and everything for us to get these things that we love so much? You mentioned certain things, of course, like you said, it wasn't walnuts, it was pecans, right?
Almonds.
I'm sorry, almonds. See, I said two
pecans. Actually, pecans are pollinated by the wind. Almonds are pollinated by the bee.
Okay.
So
there's a lot of things that we want almonds on, right? You know, well, almond milk, you know, there's a lot of products that are used, or the almond is used, right? So of course that's going to skyrocket the price if there's an issue of the bees being able to pollinate those particular things, correct?
That is correct. And so what happens is, like I said, the almond pollination event is going to take place in the next 60, 70 days. That's going to be the biggest pollination event in the world. If bees disappeared, almonds aren't cheap. I like almonds, but they're not cheap. If the bees disappeared, the price is going to skyrocket. And there's research documented that if the honeybee disappeared, supposedly we as a species, human beings, would die within 3 to 5 years, because you can't get your food, you can't get all your food from a cow, a pig, mm-hmm. or the ocean. You have to have the fruits and vegetables, and it will collapse the economy. And they're saying we would die as a species. Now, keep this in mind. The Chinese, in some places, they hand pollinate, right? But can you imagine the labor it would cost to hand pollinate anything?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to get somebody to do that for $5 an hour. You're going to have to pay somebody, you're going to have somebody in the field. It's just astronomical. So they're saying there's documentation that says we as humans would disappear within 3 to 5 years. So
let me go back to that whole thing. But I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me go back, because that's like real quick, right? 3 to 5 years. If the bee disappeared, like today, you're telling me that within 3 to 5 years we will start dying off due to the fact that we cannot have these certain things that we take for granted, as I say, but being pollinated by a bee, and that we cannot survive on just the protein of the meats that we eat, as you said, the pig, the cow, the chicken, this and that and the other. We have to have these particular fruits and vegetables that are pollinated. And if mankind tries to pollinate it, which would not be by the bee, of course, it will be an artificial pollination. Am I right?
That is correct. That is correct. And keep in mind, the reason being is because you don't have any, because bees pollinate in mass numbers. They're the only insect that pollinates in mass numbers. In addition to that, the other issue is the population. Look at the population around the world. You got to produce food for people around the world.
Right.
And that's what bees do, right? You got to understand, people don't understand that. When you see a bee, and even before I got into it, I just said, oh, that's a bee. Oh, I'm scared. But once I got into it and I started understanding the importance of the honeybee, that's when I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that. And the average person doesn't know. If you look at the big picture, there are billions of people around the world. And you got to have the fruits and vegetables for your body.
Right.
And you can't pay somebody to just imagine the labor to hand pollinate. Just imagine that.
And I remember you sharing the last time we spoke about the fact that, you know, the story of the person that talked you into getting into this business, right? You shared that of a woman who convinced you to do it. You were very much against it, but you went ahead and did it. You went to some seminars and started slow, and then you started learning more and more about it. But what really got me was when you were saying how you are allergic to bees, okay, depending on where you get stung, right?
Yes, that is correct. So the lady's name is Deb Santos. She pushed me into the bee business. Come to find out, I didn't know at the time, but once I got stung in the face, my wife wasn't happy about it, and she pestered me about going to the doctor. And, you know, like, I took some Benadryl when I got stung, but eventually I went to the doctor to get an EpiPen. And when I spoke to the doctor, she said, oh, you're allergic to bees. She said, anytime you get stung by a bee, that's an allergic reaction. Now, when I get stung in the face, my face swells, but I get stung, and I wear my bee veil on a regular basis. But there are times I get stung in the leg, I get stung in the arm, nothing happens. But if I get stung in the face, my face swells. So I always, for the majority of the time, I mean, I can walk by a hive and nothing happens because bees don't bother you. But if I go into the beehive, I wear my veil because, you know, I got to go to work and people are saying, oh, what happened to you? Your wife beat you up?
Well, right.
I always wear my bee veil, and then I always have to hear my wife's mouth. So, you know, she's concerned. So I always wear my bee veil.
Your wife beat you up, right? I'm sure you're going to hear that.
Yeah.
They ain't thinking about the damn bees, right?
Yeah.
Look,
but
Edward, I knew that was coming. But go ahead and finish.
So I have the EpiPen. The EpiPen is to just in case I go into anaphylactic shock from a bee sting. I hit myself with that, and then you know you have to monitor yourself. So there had, like, I've only done in the 5 years I've been dealing with bees, I hit myself with it one time, because most of the time you go in a beehive, you know, I may, you know, the bees are temperamental. It could be the temperament of the queen. They could be very aggressive or they could be very docile. But for whatever reason, maybe it was because I was dealing with it late at night. It might have been raining or whatever. I don't know. I went into one beehive and I got stung like 10, 12 times. And not in the face, but just all over my body. So just as a precaution, I hit myself with the EpiPen. Nothing happened.
Okay.
I just as a precaution. But on a regular basis, I may, you know, during peak season, probably get stung 10 times a week. No big deal. I just keep going. It's just an intense mosquito bite to me now.
Okay, so let me go ahead and stop there, because I'm sure that everybody has some questions and comments about what you just shared, because I don't know if I could deal with just one bee sting. But let me go ahead and go to the lady of the house. Janet, you have a question or comment?
Yes, I wanted to know, do you think global warming has an effect on the bees? Because when it's below a certain temperature, they mostly, like, stay in their hives and clean out the dead bees and clean the hive and, like you said, take care of the queen. But when it's warmer, they come out. So is that affecting them in any way with the change in the weather?
Because it's also affecting the crops. It's also affecting the nectar. So they live on the nectar and the pollen. The nectar is the carbohydrate, and the pollen is the protein. So if they can't get that, it's going to affect the overall health of the honeybee. So it's a trickle-down effect all the way down to the honeybee. And the average person doesn't realize that, but, yes, it affects them. and for people to say that it's not, you know, when you cut down a tree, when you, there's small things that are affecting the honeybee. When you cut down a tree, when you spray that, what is it called?
Insecticides, pesticides,
Roundup. When you spray any of that stuff, you put that, that powder down to kill the worms, it affects the honeybee. Now, as an average person, if you want to help the honeybee, plant something that will attract honeybees, like blueberries or strawberries, or there's certain trees. Like I have in my yard, I have a tree, I have several trees planted in my yard just for late pollen and nectar for the honeybee, because most flowers, shrubs, trees have bloomed out by late July. But there's some native Georgia trees that bloom late July, August. And I have some of them planted in my yard. And I even brought my son out about a year ago after I planted them and said, hey, 40 years, 50 years from now when I'm gone and you see all these bees on this tree, this is the reason why, because I planted that. And supposedly some people say you shouldn't have planted that because it's invasive. But
what tree is that? What tree?
It's called sumac. It's a sumac tree that you can plant, and they – one time I went – and here's how I got the tree, because I didn't know anything about it. When I've gone to bee clubs, I've seen other beekeepers discuss it, but I never knew exactly what it looked like. So this lady called me out to remove some bees from my house. I went out there, and she had just bought the house maybe within a two-month period, and she had – in her backyard, she had a sumac forest. And I'm like, lady, there's no bees just sitting there. There's like a smorgasbord of bees in your backyard. So I took a picture of it, sent it to one of the master beekeepers, and they said, that's sumac. And it produces pollen and nectar in late season for the honeybees. So I asked the lady, I said, do you mind if I dig some of this up? She was like, have at it. So I dug some up. And I transplanted it in my yard. And, you know, there's small trees right now, but one day that forest that I saw in that lady's backyard, that's what's going to be in my front yard. And I explained it to my son so he won't be alarmed while all the bees are in the yard.
So a sumac plant, is that the same as a sumac? Is it just small?
I can't call the name of it now, but there are three different varieties. There's a smooth sumac. And there's something else. But there are three different varieties of this particular tree. And I'm not talking about the sumac like poison ivy sumac or something like that. I'm talking about an actual tree.
Right. Uh-huh. It's not a vine. It's an actual tree. It's not
right.
Like
it's not
a poison
right.
ivy. With the poison ivy is a vine. Right.
Right.
So
exactly.
I'm pretty sure
it's an actual tree.
So there's an actual tree. Let me go ahead and see if, Cotton Campbell, are you there? You have a question or a comment for Mr. Morgan?
I do have a question, and you may have already said this, so I apologize if I'm repeating anything that you said, but I heard that once a bee stings once, they cannot sting twice. Is that true?
So 99% of the time that is true, but here's the thing, I'm still learning. So 99% of the time what happens is a bee stings you, female bee stings you, and the stinger is attached to the abdomen. So what happens is the stinger is barbed, it gets stuck in the skin, and it pulls the abdomen out. However, one of the other things that I'm looking at is called apitherapy, and I was watching this YouTube video, and this person showed where it doesn't have to happen if you're gentle with the bee. So in apitherapy is where you pay, where it's like medicine, where you pay somebody. Let's say you have supposedly, I'm looking into it, I'm not in it yet, where you have arthritis, you suffer from arthritis, or let's say some type of autoimmune deficiency, and you pay somebody to sting your body. This lady showed where someone got stung, but she was very gentle with the bee and put the bee back in the beehive so the bee wouldn't die. So if you allow the bee not to pull the abdomen out, the bee can survive. But on typical, in a typical scenario, yes, the bee will die. Now, let me say this. That's a female bee. Male bees don't have stingers, and the queen has a smooth stinger. She can sting you repeatedly. So the bee that you're talking about is a female bee, and 99% of the time, that is correct.
Wow.
Hey, real quick, I want to shout out 302-531. I see you on the board. If you have a question or comment, make sure you hit the number one, and I'll open up your mic for your question or comment for Mr. Edward Morgan, the Bee Whisperer, I like to call him. And for you folks that are listening in the chat room, go ahead and post your questions or comments. Appreciate you being here. Wow, this is interesting information because, you know, we take these things, as I keep saying over and over again, for granted. So I appreciate you teaching us on this. In the times that you've been stung and everything, I mean, as you said, it's a little painful, right? A little painful. All right. Like, how long does that pain last? You don't mind me asking.
Oh, I mean, it lasts, you get stung, it'll last about a minute or two. That's about it.
Oh, a minute
and here's
or two?
The thing. Here's the crazy thing. Like, when I'm teaching, if you've ever driven by and you saw me out there with people, right, and every once in a while I get stung when I have people there, I'll pull the stinger out, and I'm like, this is what you're scared of. That little stinger right there, you can barely see the stinger. I said, but the issue is it's pumping venom in you, but somebody told you along the way of your life, oh, be scared of bees. But this little stinger, this is all you're scared of. This is it. And once you get past the stinger, there's nothing else to it. And I try to tell people all the time, there's some places I won't go, but I'll go in that beehive, no problem.
Right. You feel safer. Now, the last time you were on the show, you were
saying, they're going to some neighborhood.
Right. Exactly. And I can agree with that. Well, last time you were on, well, actually, I don't want to talk about the last time you were on, but you did share something that I found really interesting, and I shared that with folks after you were on before about what you mentioned already, how bee farmers are taking the bees to farmers of crops and releasing the bees to pollinate, and they're getting paid for it, right?
So,
the bees are coming back and making honey. So they're winning on two sides, correct?
Oh, yeah, So what happens is, like I said, spring will be here in about 60 days. So you got commercial beekeepers. And, you know, when I first started, I've never seen this, but I've seen it on YouTube videos. I've actually never seen it in person. But you got commercial beekeepers that have 10,000 beehives. And they move those beehives across the country to a citrus grove, an almond grove, blueberries, water, whatever farm needs pollination, they move them in mass numbers. So let's just
now
say,
give us just
from
a little
what
bit
I understand,
of a break there, but I'm sorry to interrupt. We got 15 more minutes, but give us a little bit of breakdown of how many bees can be. You said how many beehives again?
Some commercial beekeepers have 10, 15,000 beehives.
Okay, and how many bees could possibly be in each hive?
It could be anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000. It could be more than that.
Oh,
it just depends on how productive the queen is.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
Right. So it just it varies. There's no set number, but if the queen is very productive and everything is in order, the parasites aren't affecting them, there's thousands of bees in there. And so what happens is a tractor trailer load, from what I understand, what I was told, can hold up to 450 beehives. And they take them to a specific farm. They drop them. They may be there for a month and a half to 2 months. They're going to supposedly get paid $50,000 just to drop them in the grove, right? They may sit there for a month and a half to 2 months. They're going to pick them up. But here's the issue. This is why they're getting paid that amount of money. When they come back, because keep in mind, those farmers are spraying pesticides. Some of those bees are going to die.
Right.
Some of those bees are going to die, right? So they're paying for that. And then the beekeeper is going to process that honey, and then they're going to drop them at the next farm. So it's a 12-month cycle of moving those bees from farm to farm. They're going to lose some, but they're getting paid. And then in addition to that, they're getting two bites at the apple. They're getting paid for pollination, and then they're getting paid for the honey, and then some of them bring them back, and they may sell some. So depending on what they're doing, they could get three bites at the apple and sell some bees. But it just depends on the condition by the time they come back to the farm.
Right. Okay, I follow you. That makes a lot of sense. So there's some loss in the business. And it's really hard to really make money.
But overall, they're making money because just imagine you're getting paid $50,000 to drop them bees. Now, keep in mind, you got to have staff to move 450 beehives, and then you got to treat the bees for the parasites, right?
Right.
And there's labor to make sure that those, and then the equipment. So there is an expense, but there's money. They're making, the bottom line is they're making money.
Wow. So have you considered?
But before that, before I got into it, I didn't even know that existed.
Right. So have you considered going down that same path as you grow?
But I have the land to do it. But I got a full-time job, and my wife will not allow me to quit my job right now. But one day I plan to retire, and if I retire and I'm in position to do that, I may go that route. You just got to have the bees.
Right.
But there are different things that I do right now. Like I sell bees. I sell queens. You can sell one queen bee for $35. I sell hives. I teach people how to get started. So, I'm not complaining right now, but there's plenty of opportunity out there.
Mm-hmm. And with the weather happening the way it is here in Georgia, I just want to ask that, and I want to go ahead around the table and see if anybody else has any more closing questions or comments. With the weather that's happened recently here, the quick, it was 70 degrees here in Georgia. And like I said, I relocated. I'm not as close to you as I was, but I'm not that far away. I'm in Mapleton now. But have you noticed any kind of effect on your hives when it dropped down into the 20s? Or are the bees just that intelligent enough, hey, time to go home and stay home? And does it count?
If it's 20 degrees, they definitely don't come out. But for whatever reason, today they came out, and the first time I saw it was when I was looking at some posts on Facebook, and then I went outside and I was like, "There's a bee," and then I saw plenty of bees, and then I went and walked by the beehives, and they were coming out, and then I went on the Weather Channel, and it was like 38 degrees. And I'm like, what is going on?
Because
they typically do not come out. For whatever reason today, they were out.
So that should be something that we need to pay attention to.
Exactly.
Janet, you got a comment?
I read an article that when the bees come out when it's cold, it's because they are really cleaning house, getting rid of dead bees and you know, cleaning up behind, like you said, the queen. But I also saw a documentary about in Africa where people gather, go and catch bees so that they can get money from selling the bees so that they can ship them to England and different places, you know, so for other people's crops. So that's a lucrative business right now in Africa.
Well, here's the crazy thing. It depends on what kind of bee that you're talking about in Africa, right?
Yeah.
Well, even the honeybee. But here's the thing. The African honeybee is very aggressive, right?
And
here's
then
crazy, and here's how I found out. When I got stung, I went to the doctor to get the EpiPen, and I was telling the receptionist what, you know, I need to get an EpiPen, and I was telling them what was going on. They were like, hey, I just want to let you know that your doctor, her dad died from bee stings. I'm like, what? And they were like, yeah, but don't say anything. If she says something, then you can have a conversation, but don't say anything. So I get in the doctor's office, and I tell her what, you know, I need the EpiPen, blah, blah, blah. And she was telling me how serious it is for the EpiPen and why you need it. And then she tells me that her dad was the first person to die from African bee stings in Georgia. And you can Google it. Just Google, I think it's African bee death in South Georgia. And her dad, I don't have to go into her name. But anyway, her dad died because he was moving some wooden structure in the woods, and it had African bees in it. And there are no African bees in North Georgia, but they have them in South Georgia. And African bees are very aggressive. So he moved it, and when they found his body, he was covered with bees. So when you say African bees, I don't know if people are actually gathering
honeybees.
Aggressive African bees, because we don't want them here, because if they ever move into North Georgia, it's going to run me out of business.
Right.
Well, no, they're selling them to England and Italy and for vineyards and things like that. They were selling the bees and shipping them out to different places. But they didn't say anything about the U.S., but it's probably some coming here.
Yeah.
Well, there are some who are already in Georgia. There are some already known to be in South Georgia, according to some article.
Exactly.
A large contingency of them, but there are some here in South Georgia. They just haven't, as he said, they haven't moved to North Georgia, I guess because it's colder when you come north. I had a person the other day on Facebook when it was, in fact, just last night I was watching someone's live stream and from Minnesota. When it was 30-something degrees here last night, almost in the 20s, someone was saying, well, it was in the 50s here, nice 50s in Georgia. And I'm like, no, you can't be talking about where I live. But it was in South Georgia, so there's a difference there. So probably those bees don't go too far north. Just like certain birds fly to the south when the winter comes, bees don't go north when the winters come. So that's an interesting point to look at. Hopefully they won't spread as much. And I wanted to ask you something about the African bees and the mating between them and honeybees, but I want to hold that question for the next time I invite you on because I'd love for you to come back.
You going to invite me back?
Of course. Will you come back?
Sure.
You took a pause for a while there. But, yeah, we're going to invite you back.
That's the
internet. No, because you know what? Well, the thing is that, to be honest, you guys, I really had planned on going and visiting his spot with the bees and everything today, but something came up, unfortunately, which always happens, unfortunately, but I'm going to try to make sure that doesn't happen again where I have to switch gears. But I'm definitely going to make sure, Janet, if you get a chance, and really I want to see if all the co-hosts that live here, we can all come and visit you. Of course, we'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. And we'll come visit and see it before the next time you come on the show so we can actually experience it if they're brave enough.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, you need to, I need to actually take you into the beehive and blow your mind.
Just as long as I don't get stung, I'm cool.
Well,
okay.
Hold on.
I'm willing to take
it. So part of the experience, everyone that has come to my apiary signs a waiver that I cannot guarantee that you will not get stung.
Oh, okay. So make sure you have the best. Make sure you have the best damn bee suit you have on me, okay?
I will put you in a bee suit, rubber boots. But
I gotta have
I will not guarantee that you will not be stung.
Now, here's the thing.
I probably, Michael, had about 500 people at my place,
mm-hmm.
and out of the 500 people, only 3 people have been stung.
That's a good count. I like that count.
But I just can't guarantee.
I don't want to be number 4, but I will love to come.
Okay.
All right. Hey, let's see. Cotton Campbell, have another last question or comment?
No, I have been thoroughly fascinated, and I want to come. I'm not in Georgia, but I do want to come. As long as, like Michael said, I don't get stung, we good.
I can't guarantee that.
That's right. There's no guarantee. Interesting
I'm
point.
I'm gonna need a guarantee, an extra suit or something.
Well,
hey, guys, we gotta be out of here.
Michael will guarantee, but
left.
I won't.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't. Okay, we got 60 seconds left here on the TMGS. Hey, thanks to my co-hosts Janet Davis, Cotton Campbell, and also Time and Ship for a great Saturday here with our special guest, Mr. Edward Morgan, the Bee Whisperer. And when we all come from visiting the colony of bees, and when we have him back on the show, we'll let you know about the experience. We're going to do that soon. And make sure next week you tune in to the TMGS. You know what? There's a topic I want to talk about, and I would like for all the listeners to make sure that you tune in next Saturday, because always we have different conversations. What's happening, you know, here and there and elsewhere. But there's one thing I want to talk about is, you know, the generations. What has changed in the black generations? What has changed? What is so different about us now? What I see is lack of self-respect and common courtesy. That's going to be one of our major topics next Saturday here on the TMGS. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, the rest of this evening, tomorrow. God bless, and we'll see you next week. Thank you from the bottom of my – well, I'm sorry, the top and the bottom of my heart. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Here we go.